Please, continue, he said.
She was so beautiful, my mother.
Dr. Lamborn smiled. You take after her, then?
Oh, no, she said dismissively. My mother was really stunning. Film star looks, you might say. And such a talented artist. Landscapes. She even sold a few of her paintings. A couple of them were bought by another painter who'd also studied at the Manchester School of Art, L.S. Lowry. You've probably heard of him.
Dr. Lamborn looked up from his pad.
Yes, indeed. Impressive. She didn't make a lot of money, but she really was on the cusp of something special. He called her an exceptional talent. The temperature of the room had plummeted.
Are you cool enough now, Amy?
I'll close the window. Then maybe we can talk about Carrie.
No!
She shouted.
No, no, no!
He stopped and stepped away from the window.
As you wish, I'll leave it open.
I'm not talking about the bloody window! She raged.
I told you not to say her name and you didn't listen to me!
She stood and faced him, not bothering to hold back the sobs as she pummeled his chest with her fists.
You didn't listen to me!
He grabbed her wrists and held them tightly. She was no match for his strength, and all her fight drained away as her knees began to buckle. He circled his arms around her body and held her close, gently stroking the back of her head.
We'll leave it there for today, Amy. You've done very well.
As her sobs subsided, she blotted her nose with a handkerchief, then handed it back to him. He put his palms up.
Please, he said. You keep it.
She nodded and silently stuffed it up her sleeve, a weak smile on her lips.
Thank you.
Chapter 21 Amy cupped her hands and blew a warm cloud of breath into her palms. She had always suffered from bad circulation, and her fingers were stiff and blue with the cold. She trudged around the airing court, where the snow had all but melted, leaving just the odd pile of brown mush. The biting wind gnawed at her cheeks and whipped around her exposed neck. She turned up the collar on the wholly inadequate coat they'd provided her with, the thin fabric worn away in parts, the torn lining neither use nor ornament. She had a perfectly good coat at home, bright red, fitted at the waist, with huge buttons all down the front and a black fur collar. She smiled at the stir it would create if she were allowed to wear it in this miserable place. It had been 2 weeks now since her last session with Dr. Lamborn, and she had not seen or heard from him since. No doubt he had grown fed up of her, tired of her tears, which always seemed to unsettle him. The second she showed any emotion, he always abruptly ended the session. She stopped by the gate in the wall and stood next to Belinda, who was gazing through the bars.
Waiting for your rendezvous?
Eh?
A stubby cigarette protruded from Belinda's yellow teeth.
Never mind, replied Amy, recoiling from her stale breath.
Belinda called through the bars of the gate to where a few of the male patients were digging over the vegetable patch.
Aye, you with the spade. Got any fags? You can have a little fiddle in return.
She pulled her dress open to reveal her saggy breasts, blue veins clearly visible beneath the pasty skin.
For God's sake, Amy muttered under her breath. Where's your dignity?
The lad with the spade looked up and scratched his head.
Are you talking to me?
He shouted. Amy recognised Ed's voice immediately.
Leave him alone, Belinda, you dirty slut. He's only a boy.
Gonna mate me, are you?
Belinda sneered.
If necessary, yes.
Belinda snorted.
I'd like to see you try.
She balled her hands into fists, but Amy was too quick, and she just had time to delight in the shocked look in Belinda's eyes as her fist connected with her cheek. Belinda stumbled backwards, cracking her head on the wall behind her before she slumped to the ground. Amy rubbed her knuckles as she smirked at the pathetic figure on the floor. She could hear Ed calling her name but had no time to answer before she felt Sister Atkins grab her from behind and force her arm up her back. She heard a bone crack and was sure her shoulder had been dislocated. The pain was blinding, and had Sister Atkins not been holding her up, she would have collapsed in a heap next to the blubbering Belinda.
"I've had just about enough of your nonsense."
Sister Atkins spoke through gritted teeth, flecks of spittle landing on Amy's cheek. In spite of the pain in her shoulder, she longed to wipe her face, but Sister Atkins now had both arms firmly wrenched behind her back.
"Belinda, get up!" ordered Sister Atkins.
Belinda staggered to her feet, blood dripping from both nostrils, her greasy hair framing her snarling features.
"Now listen to me, you two. I don't want any trouble on the ward. You leave it out here. Do you hear me?"
Both girls were silent.
"I said, do you hear me?"
raged Sister Atkins. Amy stared at Belinda through narrowed eyes. "Yes, sister."
"Belinda?"
Belinda folded her arms and scuffed at the dirt with her toe.
"Yes, sister," she mumbled.
Sister Atkins released her grip and shoved Amy hard in the back.
"This is your final warning."
She turned and marched back inside, leaving the two of them alone, the palpable hatred simmering between them. Amy turned to move away, but Belinda grabbed a fistful of her hair and spoke into her ear.
"You haven't heard the last of this. You'd better watch your back."
"I'll do your worst. I'm not scared of you, you pathetic trollop."
She elbowed Belinda in the ribs and stormed off to the other side of the airing court. A group of women stood in a huddle, falling silent as she strode past.
"Show's over,"
she snapped.
"Do you want to tell me what that was all about this afternoon?"
She glared at Dr. Lamborn and shook her head.
"No, I don't." "Amy, I'm trying to help you. Really, I am, but you don't make it easy. I'm giving you a lot of my time, more than I'm giving to my other patients. Why do you think that is?"
"I know. You've already told me. You think the others are all certified lunatics who are far too gone to respond to this kind of help. Either that, or you fancy me."
He closed his eyes, tried to compose himself before replying.
"I shall not dignify that last comment with a response. Now we shall continue where we left off at our last session."
He glanced down at his notes.
"Thinking back to when you took your stepmother's baby..."
He paused to check she was listening.
"When you took Carrie's baby..."
She stiffened at the mention of the name, knew he was deliberately trying to provoke a reaction. She would not give him the satisfaction, would not make this easy for him. Her mouth was dry, and she fought to keep her voice steady. He was never going to let this drop, so she might as well get it over with. Besides, it was comfy here on his couch, in the quiet haven of his office, away from those savages on the ward. It wouldn't do any harm to humour him.
"I think you were right, Doctor. I had blocked that night from my memory. It would have been my mother's birthday, her 40th. But nobody else had remembered."
She looked at Dr. Lamborn, her face a picture of incredulity.
"Can you believe that? My father hadn't even remembered it was his wife's birthday. I mean, they'd been together since they were 16, but all he was interested in was cooing over his new baby. He didn't even think about his other baby, who'd been so tragically killed. I just didn't fit into this family anymore. There wasn't room for us all. I thought about running away, but where would I have gone? And in any case, why should I be driven out of my own home?"
"Let me see if I understand this correctly," interrupted Dr. Lamborn.
"Your father and Carrie eventually married and had a baby together."
"Eventually?" "That's a laugh. They married only 5 months after they met."
"I see. And how long after that did the baby come along?"
9 months,
she scoffed.
"Boy or girl?"
"Does it matter, really? What's the point in all these questions?"
"Boy or girl?" he insisted.
She sighed impatiently.
"Oh, for God's sake, all right then, a girl."
"Thank you. Now back to the night in question."
"Lord above, you sound like a police officer."
You do realise, Amy, you could have gone to prison for attempted suicide, not to mention murder. I think you owe a great debt to your father for bringing you here instead.
I must send him a thank you note.
You don't know how lucky you are.
Only last week I recommended a chap be admitted to Ambergate for treatment after he was found half-strangled next to the decomposing body of his late wife. He couldn't carry on without her and had tried to take his own life so they could be together again. The magistrates disagreed with me, however, and he's now doing 6 months in Strangeways instead.
She picked at the bobbles of lint on her dress, flicking them between her fingers, her disinterest obvious in her bored features. He massaged his temples, trying to stay calm.
Amy, what happened that night?
He paused.
In your own time.
He fell silent and stopped writing, hardly daring to breathe. The silence between them grew until it became suffocating and impossible to ignore. Amy was the first to crack.
I wanted to punish them both for forgetting my mother's birthday.
She began softly. I wanted them to feel the same pain that I had to live with every day of my life. They were both downstairs in front of the fire, the one my mother and me used to sit in. A string of nappies hung over the fireplace, steaming away, and they were just sitting there, their foreheads touching, him running his finger down the side of her cheek. They were completely oblivious to me standing there in the room. I just felt invisible, that they wouldn't even notice if I disappeared forever. It should have been my baby brother's nappies hanging there to dry, and it should have been him fast asleep in his cot upstairs. It was all wrong. She paused and rolled a ball of lint in her fingers. I decided to go away that night, never come back, make them feel guilty for what they had driven me to. But they didn't care about me. I knew they wouldn't grieve if I never came back. It was what they wanted, me out of the way. The guilt might have gnawed away at them for a little while, but they wouldn't actually miss me, wouldn't feel the all-consuming pain of loss. She stopped and smiled. That was when I decided to take the baby with me. They cared about her, you see, and then my stepmother would know the agony that I had to endure every single day.
You are one troubled young lady, Amy Sullivan.
And you're very good at stating the obvious, Dr. Lambourne. How many years were you in medical school?
He ignored the question. Continue, please.
I crept upstairs, taking care to miss out the step that always managed to make a loud creak if you went anywhere near it. I pushed open their bedroom door, and the hinges groaned so loudly I was sure they would both come bounding up the stairs. But no. They were so wrapped up in each other, they probably never even heard anything. The baby was asleep in the crib beside their bed, just her little pink face peeping out from the mound of blankets she'd covered her with. I scooped her up as quietly as I could and rocked her from side to side until she settled. Then I hurried back down the stairs, crept out of the front door, and made my way to the park.
Intend on ending your own life as well as the baby's?
I suppose so. I wasn't thinking straight. Wasn't really thinking at all. I just knew I wanted all the pain to go away. My stepmother... Carrie... She pulled a face as though she'd just taken a bite out of a lemon. Carrie was the archetypal wicked stepmother who hated me. Thought I was in the way and just wanted my father all to herself. Well, I thought she can have him. But I'm taking her baby with me. Then she too will know the excruciating pain of losing someone you love so dearly.
On the contrary, Amy, it sounds as though you had given the situation a great deal of thought.
She stayed silent for a minute, a frown of doubt creasing her forehead.
Perhaps you're right.
She threw her hands in the air. Anyway, what's it matter now? They found me and had me carted off to this place. She got what she wanted in the end.
She won.
How do you feel about Carrie now?
Her eyes widened, the fury appearing from nowhere. I hate her. She's an evil, bitter woman who turned my father against me. But he was either too blind or too stupid to realise it. Don't even know what he sees in her. She's an old hag who couldn't hold a candle to my mother. She's a witch, even looks like one. With her sunken eyes, pointed chin and warts, she's only missing a black cat and a broomstick.
She shook her head in disbelief.
But for some unfathomable reason, she made him happy. I could have done that, Dr. Lamborn. I could have made him happy.
She rose from the couch and wandered over to the window, absently running her finger through the dust along the sill. She stared out, her warm breath condensing on the glass.
My father's not coming back to see me, is he, Dr. Lamborn?
No, he isn't, Amy. He's not coming back. Not yet, anyway.
She turned round, her face inscrutable apart from the tears that glistened on each cheek.
I knew it,
she whispered.
I knew it.
Chapter 22. Sister Atkins peered at Ellen over her spectacles. The new superintendent's at it again, I see.
Oh, heck. What's he up to now, sister?
She thrust a piece of paper across her desk. Read it for yourself. Ellen squinted at the pale typewritten script, then held it directly under the desk lamp for a better view.
His secretary needs to learn when to change the ribbon. I know that much.
She read the memo twice over, not finding it difficult to imagine the depth of Sister's consternation.
It sounds like a positive move to me.
Sister Atkins raised her eyes to the ceiling. I might have known you'd see it that way. She slapped her hand down on the memo.
Unlocking the wards? I've never heard anything so crazy in all my life. Allowing them more access to the grounds? Letting them mix?
Her voice had risen so high it had nowhere left to go.
Well, he says he instigated these things at the last hospital he worked at,
countered Ellen.
It must have been a success, or else he wouldn't be trying it here, and it's only certain wards that won't be locked. The most dangerous patients and long-stay ones will still be contained.
Sister shook her head, but whether it was with disbelief, exasperation, or reluctant acceptance, Ellen could not tell. Ellen continued to look for positives.
He says the patients became less disturbed and easier to handle when they had a little more freedom. Surely that can only benefit all of us.
Sister stayed quiet, her elbows on her desk and her hands in her hair, inadvertently working her bun loose. She screwed the memo into a tight ball and tossed it into the bin on the opposite side of the room, the tinny echo shattering the awkward silence as it hit the metal bottom.
That's what I think of the new directive for the enhancement of patients' well-being.
She rubbed her hands together as though the balled-up memo had contaminated them in some way.
When I was training, we were told not to encourage the patients to fraternise. We didn't want them ganging up on us, you see.
She punched her fist into the air.
Divide and conquer, that was our motto.
She shook her head.
It's all right for his nibs sitting in his plush office dictating memos as though they're going out of fashion, but it's the likes of me and you who are going to have to deal with his fancy ideas and pick up the pieces when it all goes wrong.
She reached for the matches, lit a cigarette, and took a long, calming drag as she rocked back on her chair and stared at the ceiling. Ellen backed slowly out of the room, but hesitated in the doorway.
Sister, I went home this weekend and my mother baked a cake.
Sister Atkins had her eyes closed, making no attempt to even appear interested.
I'll alert the press, shall I?
Ellen detected the sarcasm, but ploughed on.
It's for Amy. It's for her...
She floundered, wishing she'd caught Sister in a better mood.
Well, it's her birthday today. She's 20.
Sister Atkins glared at Ellen now, the cigarette still stuck between her lips.
And you've baked her a cake? Not me, no. My mother baked her a cake. Don't split hairs, student Nurse Crosby. What exactly is it you think we're running here?
Ellen felt the familiar clamminess in her palms.
I thought it would be a nice thing to do, that's all.
Sister regarded her with a thoughtful stare, and Ellen could almost hear the cogs turning.
"What sort is it?" she asked eventually.
"Chocolate."
She squinted through the cigarette smoke. "Make sure you cut me a slice, then."
A faint smile traced her lips.
"Go on with you. Get out of here."
The day was mild but damp, a smell of wood smoke filtering over from the vegetable plot. Ellen had asked Amy if she would like to go for a walk in the grounds during visiting time. It was a move designed to take the girl away from the wards, for they both knew she wouldn't be receiving any visitors, birthday or not. Not a single card had arrived for her. Ellen swung the wicker basket by her side as they walked together in silence. A group of male patients were picking out weeds from between the furrows, the soil much easier to work now the temperature had risen. A male nurse threw some more wood on the fire, which immediately quashed the flames and sent a plume of thick grey smoke into the still air. He coughed and flapped his arms around. Ellen laughed and hoisted the basket into the crook of her elbow.
"Morning, Dougie."
His eyes streamed as he squinted to look at her.
"Ellen, how are you? What a surprise. What brings you out here?"
She nodded towards her companion.
"It's Amy's birthday, and Sister gave me permission to accompany her on a walk around the grounds."
She patted the basket.
"I've got cake."
"Well, many happy returns, Amy."
He leaned forward awkwardly, then stopped, thrusting his hands into his pockets instead. Amy managed a smile.
"Would you like to join us for tea and cake? We've got a thermos too."
Ellen noticed the glint in her eye, the coy smile. She tugged on Amy's arm.
"Come on, Nurse Lyons has plenty to do here without us distracting him."
She propelled the girl forward and called over her shoulder.
"Bye, Dougie."
"For future reference," he replied. "I'd have loved a bit of cake."
They walked on in silence until they reached the old cricket pavilion, where they could perch on a bench on the veranda, which afforded them a little shelter from the mizzle in the air. Ellen unpacked the cake and poured 2 cups of stewed tea from the flask.
"He's nice, isn't he?"
Amy took a sip of the hot tea.
"Who is?"
"Dougie. He's so handsome. He's got a lovely way with the patients. So very kind. And his accent, well, he sounds just like a cowboy."
Ellen studied Amy as the girl began to dissect her way through her chocolate cake, lifting off the layer of hard chocolate and nibbling it like a hamster before finally taking a mouthful of the sponge.
"He's very professional, yes, but don't confuse professional care with any feelings you think he may have for you."
Her words had come out more harshly than she had intended, and she regretted them immediately she saw the hurt in Amy's eyes.
"Look, I'm sorry," she apologised. "I didn't mean to snap like that."
Amy smiled.
"It's all right. I realise he wouldn't look once at me, let alone twice."
She stood up and brushed the crumbs from her dress.
"In any case, I already have an admirer in here."
She paused and stared across the field to the main building with its countless windows behind which all manner of human life had been left to wither and die.
"And he's my ticket out of this hellhole."
Chapter 23. The weeks crawled by, each day dictated by the same monotonous routine. Even if you weren't insane before you entered Ambergate, you certainly were if they ever let you out. Not a day went by without some sort of altercation, argument or drama, though often orchestrated by the staff for their own amusement. Ellen had been horrified by some of the tales Dougie had told her. Life on the male side of the hospital was certainly brutal, violence was commonplace, and so-called cures questionable to say the least. She made her way over to the corner of the social club, grimacing at the squelch beneath her feet, the carpet sodden with years of spilled beer. The top of the table was coated with a sticky residue, the origin of which Ellen could only guess at. She called to Dougie as he approached.
"Fetch a cloth, will you? This table's disgusting."
He returned with a grey dishcloth and swabbed the table. Ellen wrinkled her nose.
Marginally better, I suppose.
She noticed his quiet demeanour as he sat down and fiddled with the sodden beer mat. His usual effervescence had evaporated, and he looked as though he hadn't slept in a month.
"Are you all right, Dougie? You look so tired."
He made a valiant effort to perk up.
"Oh, sure, just been one of those days."
"Every day is one of those days in here. Do you want to tell me about it?" He hesitated.
"No, you don't want to hear my problems."
"Then why did I ask?" He took a long slug of his pint.
"We had a new patient in today. Brian's his name. His wife brought him. Said the doctor had insisted he come in for treatment, but she wasn't so sure."
"What's the matter with him?" Dougie exhaled deeply and looked shiftily left and right, lowering his voice before he answered.
"He's one of those."
Ellen frowned.
"One of those what?"
Dougie bent his wrist.
"You know, a homosexual."
He mouthed the last word.
"But you said his wife brought him in."
"That's right. They've been married for 5 years. He loves her deeply, and I can see in her eyes that she feels the same way. It's a mutually tender, caring love."
"I'm not following you, Dougie. Why is he in Ambergate?"
"His doctor referred him. He thinks he needs treatment to be cured."
"Cured? Is that even possible? I mean, he's not ill."
Dougie shrugged.
"We'll see. The aversion therapy began today. He was shown pictures of naked men and then given an electric shock."
Ellen plonked her drink down.
"Good Lord, the poor booker, that's barbaric, that is."
"I agree, it's bloody awful. But he loves his wife so much, he's willing to go through it just for her. They've never consummated the marriage."
Ellen felt her face redden and fiddled with the necklace at her throat. Dougie obviously noticed her discomfort.
"That's nice," he observed, changing the subject. "Mum sent it for my birthday. It's not an expensive one, but she would have saved for many months to afford it, so it's special."
"Ah, that's grand. When was your birthday, then?"
"Last month."
"Oh," Dougie exclaimed. "You should have said."
"I just did."
"I mean, you should have said something before now."
He stood up and held out his hand.
"Come on."
They sat on the wall side by side, the smell of warm vinegar and newspaper print wafting between them. Ellen unwrapped her bag of chips, her mouth watering at the tempting aroma.
"Thanks for this, Dougie."
He nodded towards the wooden chip hut.
"It's hardly the Midland."
"I know, but it's nice to do something normal for a change. It's easy to forget there's a big wide world outside the hospital."
She popped a hot chip into her mouth. The orange light from the gas lamp illuminated the swollen puddles, the result of an earlier downpour. A scabby dog wandered over and sat down on the pavement in front of them. He cocked his head to one side, his big brown eyes never straying from Ellen's hand as she dipped into the bag and brought out another chip.
"Ah, look at him, he's starving."
"He's a scruffy mutt, all right," replied Dougie, tossing him a chip. "You can see all his ribs."
The dog wolfed the chip down in one go and resumed his begging position.
"It didn't touch the sides, that chip. He barely tasted it."
Ellen licked her greasy fingers one by one and screwed up the newspaper.
"Thanks again, Dougie. Best birthday meal I've ever had."
He gazed into the distance, a wistful look on his face.
"I said thanks, Dougie."
He jolted back to the present.
"I'm sorry, I was just thinking about Brian and his wife. What he's prepared to go through to make her happy, that's true love, no mistake."
He turned to face her.
"But do you know what the really tragic thing is?"
Ellen shook her head.
"She's already happy. She loves him just the way he is."
He forced a smile.
"Fancy a walk?"
He jumped off the wall and stood in front of her.
"Come on."
He placed his hands on her waist as she shuffled off the wall, guiding her gently to the ground. He left one hand there, resting on her hip, and gazed down into her face. She hardly dared breathe as she felt his fingers touch her cheek. Emboldened by her apparent acquiescence, he ran his hand round the back of her head and drew her to him. She felt his hand entwined in her hair and closed her eyes, waiting for the gentle brush of his lips on her own. When it came, she let out a small sigh, opened her eyes, and smiled at him.
"You've no idea how long I've wanted to do that," he said, pulling away.
Her heart was thumping so loudly, she was sure he must be able to hear it.
"And you waited until I stank of chips before you made your move."
"Nothing wrong with that." He leaned forward and kissed her again, more deeply this time. She stumbled backwards, her body captive against the wall as he covered her face in warm kisses. The starving dog had been forgotten until he let out a piercing whine that startled them both.
"Bloody hell,"
exclaimed Dougie.
"That's gratitude for you."
He bent down and patted the dog's head.
"Wait here a sec," he said to Ellen.
He disappeared into the chip hut and returned moments later with a steaming hot bundle. He placed it on the wall and unwrapped a sausage, which he began to pull apart with his fingers, wincing as the hot meat burned his skin. He blew on the pieces, the steam dispersing with each breath.
"What are you doing?"
asked Ellen. He looked genuinely surprised.
"I don't want the poor dog to burn his mouth."
He put the sausage down on the pavement, and the grateful dog devoured his meal as Ellen and Dougie watched.
"Best threepence I've ever spent,"
Dougie declared, slipping his arm around her shoulders. She leaned her head against him.
"You're a big softy, Douglas Lyons."
He kissed her hair.
"You'd better believe it."
Chapter 24. Another skirmish had broken out in the day room. Although the chairs were not labelled, the patients tended to gravitate to what they regarded as their own chair, and woe betide anyone who dared to sit in the wrong one.
"Excuse me, Belinda, you're in my chair."
Amy forced a note of politeness into her voice and smiled sweetly. Belinda didn't even bother to look up.
"Get lost, you stuck-up cow."
Nobody could argue she hadn't tried the friendly approach first, and Amy was almost glad that Belinda had reacted in this way. It gave her a good excuse for what happened next. She launched herself at the other girl from behind, one arm securing her in a headlock, the other hand grabbing a fistful of her hair. In one quick movement, she heaved her out of her seat and sent her sprawling to the floor. Belinda clattered into a table, sending china cups flying everywhere, dregs of tea soaking into the carpet. She sat on the floor, snarling like a rabid dog, then scrambled to her feet and flew at Amy just as Sister Atkins appeared at the door.
"Jesus H. Christ, it's like the Wild West in here. I'm going to need to get saloon doors fitted."
She pulled Belinda off Amy and gave her a firm smack on the back of the head.
"I don't want to know who did what to who first. You're both as bad as each other."
She turned and smacked Amy on the back of her head too.
"There, just to show I don't have my favourites."
She pointed at the broken crockery.
"Now get this lot cleared up immediately."
Belinda and Amy knelt down and silently picked up the pieces of broken china, stacking them onto a tray. Pearl and Queenie, sitting nearby, watched on in stunned amazement.
"Sorry," said Belinda.
Amy, still on her knees, placed her hands in the small of her back.
"What did you say?"
"You heard. I'll not say it again."
Amy relented.
"Me too." She stood up and wandered over to the disputed chair in the bay window. Belinda followed and took the chair opposite.
"It's shit in here, isn't it?"
Amy could not argue with that sentiment. She looked at her foe with thinly veiled pity. She had no idea how long Belinda had been at Ambergate, but the experience had clearly ravaged her.
"Why are you here, Belinda?"
The defiance of a few moments ago vanished.
"Me dad,"
Belinda whispered.
"You don't want me no more."
Amy felt a pang of empathy. She could certainly relate to that.
"Threw you out, did he?"
Belinda chewed on her thumbnail, her hooded eyes filled with sadness.
Something like that. I think I just got too old for him. What on earth are you talking about? You can't be much older than I am. I'm 23 now.
Belinda sniffed.
But he likes him younger, you see. Came here when I was 16.
Amy was in too deep to stop now, even though every instinct was telling her to get up and walk away.
What do you mean, Belinda?
She asked, fervently hoping the girl would return to her usual hostile self and tell her to mind her own business.
He used to come to my bed nearly every night. I'd lie awake waiting for him to get home from the pub, and when I heard him clomping up the stairs, my heart would soar. I knew I wouldn't have to spend the night on my own, see?
She paused and shook her head.
I hated that. Hated having to sleep on my own. I don't like the dark, me. Sometimes he would disappear for days, and I'd have to look after myself. But there'd never be any food. Once I ate the stale bread off next door's lawn. The bloody birds were better fed than I was.
Amy swallowed, entranced by the story but hardly daring to push for more information.
And that's all you did then, sleep together?
Belinda ignored the question.
I was always cold in bed. He never wanted me to wear a nightie, said it got in the way. But when he cuddled up to me afterwards, I was warm then. I liked that.
She tilted her head back and stared at the ceiling.
His hands were rough. He's a bricky, you know. But he was never actually rough with me. Always gentle when he stroked me. He loved me so much.
I think you're confusing love with something else, Belinda, Amy said quietly.
What do you mean?
Belinda snarled, the anger never far from the surface.
You don't know nothing about him. He never hurt me. My friend's dad used to beat her black and blue. Once he smashed her head against the wall and cracked the plaster. He was so mad, he stuck the poker in the fire, and when it was red hot, he held it against her bare back. My dad never did anything like that to me, so don't you.
Amy held up her hands.
All right, calm down.
She waited until Belinda's breathing had returned to normal.
Tell me why you're in here, then. Me ma buggered off when I was a bab, so it was just me and him. I don't remember nothing about her, but I've seen a picture, like, and she was pretty, so I must take after her.
Amy studied the other girl's greasy hair, cadaverous complexion and prominent teeth, which meant she was never able to fully close her mouth. It would be difficult to imagine a less attractive specimen. God only knew what her mother had looked like.
That's nice, she replied. Perhaps you reminded your father of her.
Belinda considered this.
Nah, he hated her. She's a selfish cow. I'm nothing like that.
Amy nodded.
So, I hesitate to ask again, but why are you in here?
Be patient, Belinda snapped. I'm coming to it. She folded her arms and put her feet up on the table between them, as though she was going to come out with a nice bedtime story.
He met someone down the pub. A woman, I mean. She worked behind the bar, always stank of ale. Before I knew it, he'd moved her in with us. Can you believe?
She shook her head in bewilderment.
I just couldn't understand what he saw in her. She was such an ugly cow.
Amy could only imagine what Belinda's definition of ugly looked like. She thought about her own stepmother, the familiar bitterness threatening to choke her. Perhaps she and Belinda weren't that different after all.
And she made your father happy?
Oh, yes, Belinda scoffed. She did that all right. Brought her daughter to live with us, didn't she? She was only 7 years old. She turned her head to the window, unable to look at Amy, lowering her voice to barely a whisper.
He never came to my bed after she moved in. I assumed he was with the ugly cow, but no. He was in the little un's bed.
She turned back to Amy.
It was her who'd taken my place, not her bloody mother.
Amy let out a long sigh.
Belinda, your father was abusing both of you. Surely you can see that.
No, that's not true. He loved me, made me feel safe, did nice things to me.
Amy shuddered.
Jesus, Belinda.
Anyway, what does it matter now? When I created a fuss, he threw me out just like that. But no way was I taking it lying down. Chucked a brick through the window, didn't I?
She laughed at the memory briefly before her expression darkened again.
I'll admit, I was screaming like a mad woman, threatening all kinds. So he had me carted off to this place.
She wiped the back of her hand savagely across her cheek, as though annoyed that she had allowed the tears to come.
Two policemen dragged me off as though I was an animal. My dad shouting, lock her up, I never want to see her again.
Amy reached across and took hold of Belinda's hand. She snatched it away.
I don't need your pity.
Suit yourself, I was only trying...
Belinda stood to leave.
Well, don't bother.
Amy stared after Belinda's retreating figure as she flounced out of the room. It was no wonder she was willing to exchange her body for a few ciggies. The girl craved the physical contact that had defined her childhood. What a tragedy she had mistaken this for love. The sky had turned navy by the time Amy rose from her seat. She was alone, the cacophony of clattering china heralding the start of tea in the dining room. She rolled her head, the bones in her neck cracking as the tension eased. Her eye was drawn to something under the chair opposite. With a quick glance towards the door, she got down on her hands and knees and pulled out a sliver of broken saucer about 3 inches long. She turned it over in her hands, running her finger over the severed edge. It was sharp and pointy, the kind of thing that should be given over to Sister Atkins immediately. She lifted the seat cushion off her chair and opened the zip. Carefully, she eased the shard of china inside the cover and squashed it into the foam. Turning the cushion over, she placed it back on the chair and sat down again. Perfect. She might never need it, but it wouldn't hurt to have a little insurance policy.
Chapter 25. She hesitated outside Dr. Lamborn's office, her knuckles poised to rap on the door. She knew her neck was flushed, and in spite of herself she could feel the heat colouring her cheeks too. She ran her fingers through her hair. It was shoulder length now, and although not restored to its former glory, it was feeling a little softer now that the fabled new superintendent had introduced shampoo to the wards. Amy had yet to meet him, but she was grateful for his positive incremental changes. She ran her hands down the front of her dress, smoothing out the fabric, wondering when he would get round to revamping the communal wardrobe. Still, it didn't really matter to her. She wasn't planning on staying around much longer. She licked her lips and tasted the lipstick she had applied earlier. With a deep, calming breath, she finally knocked on the door. "Come in." He didn't look up straight away, but carried on writing on his pad, the other hand supporting his head as he bent over his desk.
"Morning, Dr. Lamborn."
Her light tone caused him to look up, the surprise evident on his face.
"Well, good morning, Amy. You sound a lot brighter today."
Uninvited, she plonked herself down on the seat opposite and crossed her legs.
"I feel it, Doctor, and it's all down to you."
She saw the flicker of embarrassment and stifled a smile. He stood up and gestured towards the couch.
"Shall we?"
"Oh, Dr. Lamborn, what on earth are you suggesting?"
He loosened the knot in his tie.
"Stop it, Amy, it doesn't suit you."
She lay back on his couch and folded her hands in her lap as he flicked through his pad, the silence broken only by the loud ticking and mesmerizing pendulum of the grandfather clock in the corner.
"I believe there was another altercation in the day room recently."
She bit down on her lip. Trust him to start with a negative when she was feeling so much better. She wouldn't rise to it, though. It was important to remain cheerful and not return to her usual, obstreperous self. She waved a hand dismissively.
"It's all forgotten about. It was nothing."
"Very well, then, if you insist." She shifted her weight and made herself more comfortable.
"I do." "All right."
He drew the word out, his tone disbelieving.
You've been here for 4 months now, Amy. Tell me about your hopes for the future, your plans for when you leave here.
Her heart quickened. This was new territory. He was usually delving into her past, making her think about things she had filed away in the dark recesses of her brain. She would have to tread carefully and tell him what he wanted to hear.
I need to take responsibility for my actions, she began. I owe my father an apology, of course, but also my stepmother, Carrie.
She screwed her eyes up and held her breath for a moment.
I need to realise that my mother's death was not my fault and that my father is entitled to happiness.
She was into her stride now, the words tumbling out almost parrot fashion.
None of this is Carrie's fault. She couldn't help falling in love with my father. And whilst I accept that I will never have another mother, there is no reason why my father shouldn't have another wife.
She turned her head to look at him. And although he had his hand over his mouth, she could tell from his eyes that he was smiling. He didn't speak, though, merely nodded his encouragement, giving her the confidence to continue in the same vein.
I'm determined to be happy again. Meet someone. Have a family of my own someday.
It's what your mother would have wanted for you.
She hesitated for a second, annoyed that he was making an assumption. She kept her voice steady.
Yes, I believe she would.
She swung her legs off the couch and shuffled to the edge so that her knees were almost touching.
Do you think I'm pretty, Dr. Lamborn?
He raised his eyebrows, the sudden change of subject catching him off guard.
It doesn't matter what I think, Amy.
It does to me.
I'm afraid I'm not going to answer that question.
She knew she had ruffled him, but he didn't need to reply. The answer lay in his eyes and in his awkward body language. She smiled.
As you wish.
She tugged at the neckline of her dress, then ran her fingers over her chest.
Is it hot in here, or is it just me?
A coquettish smile played on her moist lips. Dr. Lamborn ignored her and returned to his desk. He pulled out a sheet of thick yellow writing paper and dipped his pen into the inkwell.
I'm going to write to your father detailing your progress. With his agreement, we can then think about ending your certification, so that you may return to the family home.
The well of hope she had dared to create threatened to overflow. She forced herself to remain calm and merely nodded.
Thank you, Doctor.
Chapter 26. As the evenings grew longer, he relished the invigorating walk back to his cottage and the way it allowed his lungs to expel the stale air of his office. The thought of his comfy armchair nestling by the side of the log fire made him quicken his pace. When he imagined the warming glass of claret he would pour, its rich, earthy aroma, he almost broke into a run. He had made it to the bottom of the stone steps, his collar turned up against the rain, when a voice called him back.
Dr. Lamborn!
He heard the clicking of heels as the breathless voice drew nearer.
Oh, gosh, I'm glad I've caught you.
Student Nurse Crosby patted her chest as she struggled for breath.
There's somebody here to see you. Says it's urgent.
He pushed up his sleeve and looked pointedly at his watch.
It'll have to wait, I'm afraid. Tell them to make an appointment, as is customary. People need to learn that they can't just barge in and expect me to give them an audience.
Without waiting for an answer, he strode off towards the main gate, a man on a mission, craving the comfort of his own company at the end of a long day.
Dr. Lamborn, wait!
He carried on walking, but didn't need to look back to know that the nurse was running after him. She tugged on the elbow of his overcoat. He glared at her.
Do you mind?
I'm sorry, but the woman is visibly upset, Dr. Lamborn, and insisting that she sees only you. She wouldn't tell me what it was about, but she's in a dreadful state.
He cursed silently. If only he hadn't stopped to rearrange his desk before he left, he would have been through the gate and out of sight by now. He stared at Nurse Crosby, her hands in front of her in the prayer position, her puppy dog eyes pleading with him. He shook his head, his words coming out on an irritated sigh.
Very well, I'll give her 5 minutes.
The woman was sitting with her back to the door as he entered his office, but rose gingerly from her seat as she heard him come in. He removed his leather gloves and threw them onto his desk.
How can I help you?
He asked, dispensing with unnecessary niceties. She dabbed a handkerchief to her nose and held it there, the fabric muffling her words.
I'm sorry to turn up like this. I didn't know what else to do.
Spots of rain still beaded on the shoulders of her navy gabardine, and the silk headscarf knotted under her chin was soaked through. Her eyes were hidden by a pair of sparkly framed sunglasses, which he thought was odd as the sun hadn't put in an appearance for several days. Her fumbling fingers slowly removed the glasses to reveal her blue eyes, puffy and red-rimmed, mere slits in an otherwise pretty face. He felt a momentary pang of regret that he had been a trifle brusque with this young woman, who was obviously in a great deal of distress. He indicated the armchair by the fire.
"Please, won't you come and sit down? The fire's all but gone out, but the embers have a little glow left in them."
She blew into her hands, trying to coax warmth into them.
"Perhaps I'll put another lump of coal on," he said, reaching for the scuttle.
She nodded and untied the headscarf, draping it over the fireguard. Then forked her fingers through her blonde hair, teasing her curls back to life.
"Thank you,"
she sniffed. Dr. Lamborn took the chair opposite. His attitude had softened a little. His interest piqued as to why this beautiful, albeit bedraggled, girl had insisted on seeing him.
"Why don't you start by telling me your name?"
She raised her chin and frowned slightly, as though the question was a difficult one.
"My name's Carrie. Carrie Sullivan."
It seemed like several minutes before he was able to speak again. Amy had certainly depicted her stepmother in a different light altogether. This woman was nothing like the image he had conjured up from her rather unflattering, spiteful description.
"Amy's stepmother?"
he clarified. She nodded.
"Peter Sullivan was my husband."
She clenched her fist and thrust it into her mouth, biting down hard on her fingers.
"Was your husband?"
She gulped in some air, her eyes glassy with tears.
"He had a heart attack."
She lowered her voice to a whisper as she fiddled with the sodden handkerchief.
"He didn't survive."
Instinctively, he leaned forward and laid his hand on her wrist.
"I'm so sorry."
She attempted a weak smile.
"Thank you, Doctor."
She regained some composure.
"Will you tell Amy for me? I would do it myself, but things are a little, well..."
"Please, I understand. Of course, I will let her know."
He hesitated, unsure whether to proceed.
"I wrote to your husband last week, telling him of Amy's progress, suggesting that it might be time she came home."
He noticed the flash of panic in her eyes and raised his hand.
"Obviously, I see that may be difficult now. I don't want you to worry. You have enough to contend with at present."
A timid knock on the door halted the discussion. "Come in," he called. Nurse Crosby crossed the threshold, her shoulders hunched as she supported the weight of the baby in her arms.
"Sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but she's getting fractious. I think she's hungry."
Carrie's features lifted at the sound of her daughter's grumblings, and she held her arms out to receive the infant. Dr. Lamborn leaned forward and gazed at the baby's puckered-up face, the long eyelashes framing her deep brown eyes. His throat tightened.
She's beautiful,"
he managed. Carrie rocked her daughter from side to side, returning the baby's smile. She stared up at Dr. Lamborn.
"Please, Doctor,"
she implored.
"You can't let that maniac near my daughter."
He closed his eyes as he imagined Amy wading into the lake with this helpless little mite in her arms. The responsibility of protecting Carrie and her child lay heavily in his chest, and whilst there was no doubt that Amy had made considerable progress under his care, there was no telling how the news of her father's death would affect her. He picked up the baby's tiny hand.
"Try not to worry, Mrs. Sullivan. Amy's here to get better, and you have my word that she won't be going anywhere until she is."
Chapter 27. She could hear the doom-laden strains of Chopin's funeral march as she walked behind her father's coffin, the pallbearers all in perfect step with each other. She clung onto Dr. Lamborn's arm whilst he guided her into the church and settled her down on a pew. He turned and gave her a thin smile as he took his place next to her. She welcomed the closeness of him in the freezing church, where the cold from the stone floor seeped up her legs. From her knees to her shoulders she could not stop shaking, and her teeth chattered loudly in her head. Sunlight filtered through the stained-glass window, casting a kaleidoscope of colours across the plain coffin. She looked across the aisle at her stepmother, who was hunched over with her head almost on her knees, gently rocking back and forth, her face covered with a thin black veil. Dr. Lamborn patted Amy's knee.
"Are you bearing up?"
he whispered. She shook her head and buried her nose in the hymn book. The yellow pages smelled musty, the thin paper crispy with age. "Abide with me," she noted. "My mother's favourite hymn."
"Very fitting," nodded Dr. Lamborn. "A nice gesture on Carrie's part, don't you think?"
Amy let out an irritated sigh. "I'll never like her, so don't waste your time. It's her fault my father's dead." He tipped his head back and stared at the rafters. He seemed to count silently to 10.
"Not now, Amy, please."
The vicar's voice echoed round the sparse congregation.
"Dearly beloved," he began.
Amy closed her eyes and willed it to be over. She managed to hold it together for the majority of the service. It was only at the mention of her mother that she let out a huge gulping sob that bounced off the walls of the church, causing a few members of the congregation to give her a pitying glance. The nutter who was only allowed to attend her own father's funeral under the close supervision of her psychiatrist. Outside in the sunshine, she stood over the empty grave, watching her beloved father being lowered into the ground, her stepmother sobbing prettily into a floral handkerchief. There was an awful finality to it, and she felt a dreadful sense of hopelessness and utter despair. Dr. Lamborn stood head bowed, hands clasped behind his back. The first signs of spring were everywhere. The snowdrops were past their best, but the crocuses and daffodils were already providing a flash of colour, thrusting their way up between the headstones. Everybody was so wrapped up in their own misery that for a minute she considered making a run for freedom. But while she knew exactly what she was running from, she had no idea where she would run to. Dr. Lamborn had insisted they go back to the house to pay their respects and partake of a snifter of sherry to toast her late father. Carrie had opened up the front room. It had always been decreed the best room and had seldom been used by her mother when she'd been alive. Amy felt a traitorous pang of guilt as she edged her way into the room and flumped down onto the hard sofa. The curtains were still drawn as a mark of respect and would no doubt stay that way for many weeks to come. Dr. Lamborn handed her a schooner of sherry, which she tipped down in one go, the burning sensation causing her eyes to water. "How long do we have to stay here?"
"I didn't think you'd be in such a rush to get back to Ambergate, Amy."
She gazed around the room at the unfamiliar adornments. The plain utility furniture was still there, but her stepmother had seen fit to add some rather garishly coloured cushions and a rug that had evidently belonged to a sheep in a former life. The anaglypta, which had previously been painted a rich coffee colour, was now a rather more boring magnolia. She stood up as Carrie entered the room, The baby perched on her hip. The ridiculous veil had gone, and Amy could see her own grief reflected in her stepmother's face.
"Thank you for coming, Amy."
The sound of her own name on her stepmother's lips ignited the simmering fury that was never far from the surface.
"How dare you!"
she raged.
"You don't thank me for coming to my own father's funeral. I came because I wanted to, because he was my father, my blood relative, who wouldn't even be dead if it wasn't for you."
The baby stared wide-eyed at Amy, and Carrie placed a hand over the infant's ear and pulled her close.
"I'll thank you not to shout at me in my own house. Show some respect. Your father would... Don't you tell me what my father would or wouldn't have done."
Amy leaned in close to Carrie's face. She could feel her breath on her skin.
"You killed him."
She spoke with such venom, the baby burst into tears as Carrie fled from the room. Dr. Lamborn, who had remained silent during the exchange, finally spoke up.
"That was rather nasty of you, don't you think?"
"Well, I might have known you'd take her side."
She was breathing hard, her bloodless lips white with anger.
"Take me home, please."
"Home?"
he queried. She paused and stared at him through narrowed eyes.
"To Ambergate,"